life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
Hello! Today you have chosen to listen to the Goku Midnight Eye episode of Dynamite in the Brain anime podcast. Good choice! I am Brian Smith. Sitting 280 miles over there is my co-host, Anthony Askew.
Hello.
And we are joined today by one of the hosts of The Secret of the Sailor Madness and our cohort in the Let's Go podcast, it's Niall Flanagan.
How are we keeping?
Full of cold, as I was struggling for
me
breath
too.
By the end of that introduction. It's like,
you softies. You need some fisherman's friend.
Well, I'm not. I yesterday morning I had a Barry White voice. Thankfully, I don't have that today.
Oh no.
Okay, we're here to talk, as mentioned earlier, Goku Midnight Eye, or Midnight Eye Goku, depending on which way you want to flip it. So, this series, from the creator, Buichi Terasawa's website, buichi.com, Goku's left eye socket contains a computer terminal device. Moreover, that computer is tied directly into every computer in the world. All types of information instantaneously come flying into Goku's left eye. He is the man with God's left eye. The story is about Goku and the women that exist around him. Which...
is it?
I think it is. Both these two OAVs are about...
ah, well.
This woman, yeah. a woman who exists around him.
Yeah, and both of them kind of end the same way. Yes. If they get there in different directions, but yeah.
And I've also got the notes from the back of the manga video release, I think, for the very first OAV. Can I do it in a manga video voice? Let me see.
Go on, go on.
From the director of Ninja Scroll and Wicked City comes Goku Midnight Eye, Part 1. The first in a pair of imaginative, violent and stylish techno-thrillers from manga star Buichi Terasawa. The year is 2014. Tokyo is a city balancing on a knife edge between financial prosperity and seismic destruction. A place where the threat of imminent destruction breeds crime like a disease. For Goku Furiniji... I've probably mispronounced Furinji. That. Furinji, that's it, yes.
Furinji.
I added an extra I there. For Goku Furinji, ex-cop and super-powered private detective. However, crime is money. A rash of unexplained deaths is decimating the ranks of Tokyo's Special Investigation Section. Goku's investigations almost bring him close to death, but he is rescued by a mysterious power and given weapons of frightening capabilities. Now out for revenge and armed with these weapons, Goku faces the most dangerous corporate executives in the city, an elegant genius with a fetish for bizarre weapons, a killer android with a laser beam scream... and a girl whose hypnotic power can drive a man to suicide. Or even worse.
What worse?
No.
We don't find out.
No.
It'll make you drop your pants in public.
Well, say, it's a murder. It drives a couple of people to want to murder and want to
else. One guy, yeah.
Laser beam scream. That's the best way to describe it.
Mm. Yeah. My man, so many days to like trim that down like a few sentences.
It's a big one.
Okay, so these are directed by Yoshiaki Kawajiri,
right.
Niall's main man.
Specialist subject.
The first one is written by Buichi Terasawa with Ryuzu Nakanishi, who I think we would best know from being a scriptwriter on 80 Days Around the World with Willy Fogg.
Oh.
Could you see the similarities?
It's the same.
Well, when you see the whole thing, we'll go with like, tapping into the worldwide like satellite stuff there, seeing the whole globe. Obviously, yes, they got him in to do that because it's like a world-spanning story, you know. Yeah. But he's traveling around the world but out leaving the country. It's, you know.
Willy Fogg and the women that exist around him.
The one woman in the entire show, if I remember correctly. He wasn't around for the second episode. I think you possibly can tell.
Yeah. he was obviously like the restraining force in the office there, in the writing office.
On the first one, animation director is Hiroshi Hamasaki and Yutaka Okamura, and they split design duties as well, with Hiroshi Hamasaki doing the character design. He also worked on Cyber City Oedo, Biohunter, and Darkside Blues in a similar capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And mecha design was Yutaka Okamura, as I mentioned, but more famously now known as Tensai Okamura. And he's the director of Darker Than Black, Blue Exorcist, Seven Deadly Sins, and also the Stink Bomb segment of Memories.
Hmm. I wonder why he went... Was Yutaka Okamura a pseudonym, or was
this... Oh, it's Tensai Okamura. I think... I don't know. Maybe, I can't remember which one's the pseudonym.
Hmm.
But on the second one... It's still Hiroshi Hamasaki doing the animation direction and character design, but the mecha design and director is Hiritoshi Sano, who had similar roles on the first episode of Cowboy Bebop, Vision of Escaflowne, Gundam 0083, and Venus Wars. And the voice of our hero through both of these is Juji Matsuda, who hasn't done that much anime. He was Hyena in Silver Fang. And the other voice he's famous for is Muku in the various...
Muku!
In the various Ponkiki, which are like live-action series for kids. Okay. He plays like a monster. I'll stick a link in the show notes.
Is he more of like a live-action actor? Or?
I'm not sure. I couldn't find that much about him.
Mm.
However, there was also a UK dub and a US dub. The UK dub was adapted by John Walskill, who was responsible for a lot of the UK dubs which have a lot of swearing in.
What a hero.
A lot of
all of them, I believe.
I don't think all of them are like this, but if they do have them, there's a good chance he did that. And he was also a co-writer and cameoed in the film I Bought a Vampire Motorcycle. So maybe they brought him on because there is a vampire for something which looks like a vampire motorcycle.
It's just a calling card.
In this. And the UK Goku was played by Jeff Harding, who I knew when I looked him up, I was like, that's Ed Winchester from The Fast Show.
Yeah.
And Father Buzz Cagney from Father Ted.
Yeah. I actually hadn't watched the UK dub for quite a while. I think when last time I watched it was I did the US dub, which I hadn't actually seen before. And now I can no longer separate Goku from Buzz Cagney now. And now I never ever see an episode of Fire Ted ever comes up. Now I'm expecting him to whip out that extending pole and start whacking some dudes.
How about his left eye?
But he's one of these Americans who live in the UK, or lived in the UK maybe, I don't know if he still does, who do a lot of, if you need a genuine American accent, he will appear in it. The words he's saying may not sound genuinely American, but the accent is genuine.
Yeah. If I wanted a few factual, genuine, genuine American voices. And
say, with Wicked City, it was another guy similar. So I think a lot of the time it is... I hear Americans say that, they're British people doing American accents in these things, but I think a good chunk of them are just Americans doing British dialogue.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a British person being American.
Yeah, just if there's two giveaways now, they say university instead of college, and we're talking about beating somebody up, remembering this at least now. One, if you go in and start hassling this gangster, you're going to get your head kicked in.
And also, weirdly, they talk about paracetamol instead of whiskey.
Paracetamol is a hell of a drug, man.
But if you're in America, you got an adaptation by Arthright Chamberlain, who worked similarly roles in Robotech, Samurai Pizza Cats, and currently Glitter Force.
Oh
that thing.
Saturday Thursday.
And, of course, for obvious trivia fans, he was the voice of Kosh in Babylon 5. But the voice of Goku in Midnight Eye is Steve Blum, or Bloom, however you pronounce it. Is it Blum or Bloom?
I'm going to say Blum.
It's Blum, I believe. Or is it Bloom? No,
I'm going to say Blum.
It's spelt Blum, but people who've got weird names like that will then correct
you. Change them for silly reasons.
It's pronounced Bloom.
I think I've heard Bloom before, so...
So
Bloom.
Let's call him Steve Blum. Of course, Spike in Bebop, Mugen in Champloo, Wolverine in assorted recent Marvel cartoons, and many, many other.
Roger Smith! He's everywhere.
He's ubiquitous. He's...
What a guy.
So let's get started with our history with this series. How and when did we first see it? I shall start by saying this is the first time I've seen it. I will say I never watched it because it didn't look like the sort of thing I would like. And specifically, I didn't watch it because the hero wasn't wearing a shirt.
That's the wrong reason.
Judging a book by its cover, eh?
I was, yes. Look smart if you're in, or just I don't wear a jacket at all.
But the thing is, it's not even wearing a shirt now. He's wearing some kind of like wrestling onesie, alternate thing. It's just like what's exposed is this bare chest. But if you just go to one either side, the clothes are there.
I think if he wasn't wearing the tie,
I would rather see him wear a tie. How smart do you want? Hey, I'm sure. Who's that England? Or like, is it Rob C. Nesbitt who wears off keeping appearances? Oslo, does he not wear a tie without a shirt?
I can't remember.
I'm sure someone does in British comedy.
I'm sure plenty of people have.
Yeah, and they look just as smart.
I know Violence Jack wears an ass, got a kind of a smart little ascot and no shirt. So
see, it's a new look. See, it's 2014, it's caught on.
Anthony, had you seen this before?
Oh, I've seen this way back when it was on Sci-Fi. I can't remember there being a second episode, but never mind.
Yeah,
I don't know if I watched the second episode then. I'm sure I've got it. I'm sure I must have done.
Having watched the second episode today, I could understand how it could have easily slipped your mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was pretty sure they were on like back to back.
I feel they must have been, but perhaps... I felt so content after watching the first one, there was no need to... I must have watched it, but I still can't remember it.
It might even have been kind of cut together into one long thing. Well, I can't say for certain, but...
Possibly. But yeah, I've seen this a lot of times before. VHS recorded off the old TV.
How about you, Niall? Similar situation?
Yeah, same thing. I think I only ever saw it once on the rotation on the Sci-Fi channel. Like they repeated a lot of things, but I only ever saw it once anyway. But it made an indelible mark on me as a young man. I did it that much. And also, like, I see in kind of the credits rolling for Cabbage. Oh, that's an Indescroll guy, and a Cyber City Warrior guy. But this is my guy. He makes things I like. It's great.
So it was released in the UK and Ireland 5th of February 1996 and the 15th of April 1996 for the second volume. And they were priced VHS tapes of £9.99 each.
Not too bad.
And it was also featured on Mean and Mercenary, which was, I think, an hour-long clip video of, like, all the best fights. Yeah, the hardest-hitting fight sequences from leading manga videos. Music by Silverfish. So...
Silverfish.
The knife and silver chair.
I think they were like a UK punk band. If I remember correctly, I think I might have one of their records at my mum's. Yes, apparently this featured Fist of the North Star, Angel Cop, Crying Freeman, Ghost in the Shell, and much more. So I assume this is like the VHS version of Niall's Hell on a Cell panels. best fight scenes.
Well, I'm certainly keeping the flame alive, although I wasn't aware of its existence until the rope to this podcast.
I think there was
it's a pretty good idea,
well.
To be honest, for a VHS.
I think there was another one, and I can't remember what it was called.
The thing is, why have I never seen that in HMV back in the day?
It was kind of in the dog days of manga video, when they were running out of things they'd got licenses for, or the stuff they'd got licenses for just never seemed to come out. I think in some cases never came out.
See, I can't think of a better way to watch. Like, back as a kid, I just wanted as much fighting and as much action as I could. I can't think of a better way to have it. 60 minutes of VHS, that's great.
Yeah, I'm guessing they just like, use stuff that they already had and kind of cobble it together and put it out as a new prop. And saying, here's all the best bits condensed down into one thing. And then by two of that, people might be thinking, oh, this Fist of North Star is pretty good. I might buy the whole tape of that.
Yeah. Needs a Blu-ray release.
But that's just Am I not good enough for you? Like,
I'm not implying that. But
I'm busting my ass.
If you release yours on a Blu-ray, Niall, I will pick it up.
No, but then the dark cam eliminates kind of the ephemeral quality.
I guess so. If you wouldn't be stood in front of me each time.
Okay, so what do we think of it now? So, as somebody who's never seen this before, I really liked the first episode. I was bored by the second episode.
Yeah, it does. It is, I'd say, a good deal longer than it used to be. There was some stuff in there put in to pad out the length. And it's kind of all the more maddening there, because there are some kind of genuinely just bonkers, like, good scenes in that second part.
The sort of floating robot dinosaur things are great, and the interdimensional ballistic missile.
He digs through the ground by kind of making himself hot.
Does
he melt through the ground? That's insane.
I think even just like, you know, Goku's just relaxing with his morning coffee, and he's like, you know, turning his supercomputer in his eye, okay, look up all weapons and compile me all the best ones, and I'll pick one out of it. He's just relaxing his morning coffee, just plotting this, like, mass destruction.
Yeah, after the first one, I thought, I would watch a full TV series of this. And after the second one, I was like, change of plans. Back off. You two, who haven't seen it before.
Oh, Niall, you go first.
How does it compare to your memories?
I seen it actually recently enough, less than a year ago, anyway. I would be of a similar opinion that I liked the first bit of a lot more, seems to be a bit more. The pacing is a lot better in it now, and we're getting a lot more sense of kind of Goku as a guy, as the kind of guy he is. Whereas it gets kind of lost in all the bizarre goings on in the second part of it. Like I said, that kind of restraint isn't there in the part two, and it is just a lot of kind of padding and fluff. You know, it's a lot of things I feel put on there just to kind of get it up to the length. I'm not sure, like, if that particular story in the comic was shorter than normal, and was the first part like I imagine the first part was like, you know, definitely probably like probably a series of stories like put together, like if we have to kind of origin and out, like obviously be a bit longer than the reverse thing, whereas the second tale could have been like an
epilogue,
hardly a one shot, but maybe like, no, definitely like shorter in length, but needed to get it up to a similar as a first part, so I needed to just drag their heels, I feel, and it suffered for that as a result.
I'm just far less in love with this than what I was. I remember this being so, so good. It's still good, but it's not quite as good as I remember it at all. I think seeing episode 2 really just throws me off. Like, episode 1's good, as we've said, but it ruins it. Just, if you're going to watch this, skip episode 2, which sounds harsh, but I think you'll appreciate it far, far, far more. But I don't think it holds up as well as I remember it. I was like maybe 11 or 12 when I watched it, so...
Mm. I feel there's more kind of creative use of the eye, this cybernetic guy that can hack into any computer in the world. You could say it's like World War III, like hack into the Pentagon and the Kremlin's like nuclear arsenals and destroy the planet if you chose to. Mm. But obviously he doesn't do that, but he does things like taps into like a surveillance satellite and gets it to broadcast his picture onto one of those like big video screens in Shinjuku to taunt the main bad guy who's crossing the street. And it's like, Akuryu, I'm coming to get you. I'm coming to fucking get you, man. Like, that's that's more like excuse me. It's more like an entertaining and kind of this frivolous use of this almighty power that's been granted upon you by some mysterious individual.
And the first
Lupin would do that.
Yeah, the first one's much more loaded with bonkers ideas and visuals.
Yeah. Like, considering that said, the second episode seems quite grounded. Although there's crazy psychic stuff going on, that's about it, really.
Yeah, no one's screwing the top of their head in the second one to let wasps out.
That's one of my favourite scenes, actually.
Is it screwing his head of a... I thought he just had like a tiny hat.
Like a tiny little hat.
Okay. Yeah.
To think he screwed his head off.
I thought that was like just the lid and it was contained in his head.
But I see, that is one of the scenes I remember very vividly. The whole, don't breathe, or these mosquito things will get you. They'll sense the carbon dioxide, so they'll hold their breath in the lift. Now, that's a big, strong memory of this, and I still like that scene. I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, so the first story deals with, the first half is these cops committing suicide, and they're investigating this businessman, seems to have some connection with it. And when Goku's best friend commits suicide, he gets involved. And they try and kill him, but he gets resurrected by a mysterious...
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't
somebody.
Know. Somebody. God. Yes, a mystery man. Turns him into a cyborg, he connects to the internet, gives him an extending staff, and sets him about getting his revenge, which he does. But not before the last remaining member of this police team dies on him. But...
Oh.
And there's lots of... Let's go through some of this strange stuff, I think. Because that's...
The stripper. Let's talk about Harley. Harley Davidson.
Half cat girl or hero.
It's ridiculous. Like, when I remember first seeing it back in the day, and obviously as a young boy, like, the nudity is a shock enough. And then you hear the revving engines of whatever the heck she is, and I thought, is that what goes on in strip clubs? Do women wear these? She's basically wearing a Harley Davidson. Imagine a suit. And she's got the handlebars on the back, presumably for someone to ride, which we later see is true. And it's just ridiculous. And at this point, you do think she's a normal person.
No, she's not. Got cat fangs.
Oh, well, they could be fake.
Yeah. We've got a nasty Dracula tooth.
Yeah.
I thought she was a vampire to begin with. It was only when I saw her moving that I realised, no, it's even more bonkers than that. Because when she moves around outside of the stripping, she moves around like a cat.
Yeah. Hmm. It's weird just to have her as the exotic dancer, and all the, like, the punters during the club are all about this. So it's like, yeah, are these guys, like, really into, like, MotoGP racing? Yeah. And I get in their off time, and it's like, even in their off time, and they're more, in order to pursue, got to have a bit of that motorbike, like, fetish in there as well, just because it's the club they go to for that.
They're so jaded from the constant visual stimulation in this cyberpunk city that that's the only thing will get them off anymore.
Oh, gosh. I tell you, Goku, because I watched the US dub for the first episode, which I'd never seen before, so it was great to hear Spike. And, you know, the first friend who shoots himself, like, the guy's like, oh, maybe he only had so much drink in his body, and Goku says, like, I remember him drinking a six-pack, and it doesn't even make him feel woozy. Well, yeah, it's only a six-pack of little Japanese beer, it probably won't.
So, whereas in the UK dub, they're talking about how much paracetamol is in his body.
Oh, is that the... Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe he had a headache before he went to this noisy club and the revving of engines. And
Maybe that's his secret, you know, he wouldn't feel like... he'd do a style six-pack and not feel woozy because he's taking the paracetamol. It's out of rooms.
Oh, man. Oh, and of course we see the peacock lady.
Oh, yes, yeah. These guys are being hypnotised by this topless woman who's got peacock feathers coming out of her back. And the eyes on the peacock feathers hypnotise them into whatever she wants them to do.
Mm.
I don't know why she needs to be topless.
Well, presumably because, you know...
A bit more.
Well, presumably because, you know, the feathers are on her back and you think, the space to go up on it, but you could just wear, like a backless dress or something like that. I don't know. That's just me talking common sense. But it does lure guys in, because there's the two dudes, like, you know, doing the stakeout on Hakuyu, the main bad guy's his skyscraper base, and it's like, oh, look at that, Dean just walked into the bedroom there. Damn Hakuyu, he gets all the ladies. And they're completely enthralled by this display of this woman, you know, just getting her kid off in the thing, and then that's it. Snapped her in the trap. She peacock feathers out. She has them then.
Yeah, it's only one's looking at through the telescope, and he throws the other one out the window.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't just calling out about one and saying, oh, man, I didn't even notice when she had fun bags like you wouldn't believe. Something to hold on to while you're in the moment, you know?
It's great on the US one. He's like going, when she like starts hypnotizing him, and the other guy goes, okay, I get the idea. She's a good looker. Oh, such great lines.
Well,
the best lines.
Okay, I shall give you my favourite line from the UK dub. This is when the police chief is telling him to stop investigating because he doesn't want to risk any more of the police because they've all been killed but one who's now in. And he tells him, now I hear they're doing a stock taking down at the manure company. I suggest you get your worthless ass down there before they notice a sack of shit's missing.
That's really good. Yeah.
I remember that one like vividly from the first time I ever saw it. And I thought, wow, what a torturous like insult to try and just waggle in there.
Do you think he was writing it to try and match the mouth movements? It's like, I've got to add a few more words into this sentence to get it to work.
That's a really good insult.
I can't,
it's
I can't
terrible.
It's
very
a bit
bad.
Long-winded, but I think it gets the idea across.
Yeah, I think the idea of it, if it was shorter, would work as an insult, but they've stretched it so far.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, that's the kind of thing where, like, you know, you need somebody to kind of like step into saying something and then we kind of respond back with something along those lines, but now he's just doing the setup for it and delivering the insult in the same thing. It's like, oh, no. I suppose the writers couldn't just put in fuck off, shitbird, because it wouldn't be long enough.
No, they do that in the second one, pretty much. And my other favourite line I noted was at the end of the first episode, after his friend, who he tried to save, and she died in hospital, he says, and I still can save a woman's life. Bummer. It's like he just didn't really care at all. Yeah. Like, sarcastically saying that.
Like both episodes ended like, I'm Goku Ferengi, some mysterious guy gave me this left eye that can control anything, a computer machine in the world, and even with all that power, I couldn't save a woman's life twice.
And then he's like, guess I'm not going to get involved with women anymore, but I suspect that'll be pretty hard.
Yeah. Like, I guess to try like have a bit of, kind of that hard-bitten private eye kind of noirish narration there, for and saying, listen, everything I do doesn't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Man, what a day of fun. Flying like cyborg pterodactyls, psychic powers, half woman, half motorcycle bitches trying to kill me. I need a stiff drink and a warm bed.
Okay, let's talk about the swan gonad vector biological warfare in the first
the migratory bird weapon.
Because when they got to that, I could perfectly accept women motorcycles, robot wasps in people's heads, peacock women. But yeah, when they get to discussing, so they're selling this dictator. They're going to put a virus in the testicles of male swans who breed in the rival island's land. And so when they get horny, it will release this virus, which will kill hundreds of thousands of people in that country. And there's like a little diagram of a swan, in case they didn't know what a swan looked like. And then they sell the same thing to the opposing side.
Yeah, but how is that going to work? Because, like, the swans breed in, like, the first rival country, so how, like, I guess when they fly back, they'll just, but the breeding season is over, because they're flying back to their home without breeding, so how
maybe
is it going to, like,
it just doesn't work.
I suppose, yeah. As well, this is just some, like, military tyrant. You just know about, like, swan reproduction at all. You wouldn't know what breeding season is, so let's say that they go there.
Once they get the money, they can just hypnotise them and these two guys will commit suicide.
Kill each other, yeah.
If he doesn't go for that, I'll just like sell him the tiny mosquitoes that fill with the deadly poison. Or tranquilizer, if you so please. I don't know how he does that.
The strong man has to come along with it, though, because obviously he's the dispenser. his head.
Yeah, you got the villain, and he's got a henchman. He's like this scientist henchman who we later see dressed in a medieval knight's outfit riding the... motorcycle woman.
Oh, that outfit.
Oh, well, fuck, full body armor, some things don't go out of fashion. Didn't do him a hell of a lot of good, because he can just, you know, be taken out by a low metal rod, you know, just knock him off his head.
That's actually a really cool bit where he stretches the staff across the corridor and it severs the head off the Harley Davidson lady, and that's a cool touch. I forgot about that. I knew that bit was going to happen, but I couldn't remember how he killed those two. And because he's got like the woman's head, like a Medusa head almost. Laser beam scream.
It's a lot of use out of that. And I'm not sure the head is separated from like the internal like laser battery now. This is like a backup one in the head. Also, like, with a button to press on it. I suppose he has the eye, he can just like tap into it.
Like him touching it sends enough kind of like a way to kind of transfer the current of his eye. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
In 2014.
Yeah. Do you think he has a robot brain or do you think he's got a cat's brain? Like
robot cat brain.
Robot cat brain.
Like a tiny, tiny robot.
I thought they might have been transplanting cat's brains into android women.
Maybe he was. He's doing crazier things. One thing that kind of was bugging me as well, with like something you're watching kind of UK dub of it, because I remember it was different than the other one. When Goku's like, the eye turns on, you see he's kind of the view of that, it's scanning the objects and trying to tap into a locked door to open it. In the UK one, it was like kind of pausing it a lot and it's displaying all this information on screen, saying door unlock. Whereas, even in the other versions, it's like, screen goes up, he's obviously looking at this locked electronic door, and it opens. Whereas the UK one, since you got to pause here for a few seconds, display like electronic door set to open. And it's like, it's already implied that by him looking at it with the electronic guy, he's going to do something to the door. So, we know this eye can do anything. So...
Speaking of the eye vision, there's a bit where soon after he's killed Harley in Medieval Stormtrooper Man, when he's closing the doors, the blast doors, there's a word that says crows, C-R-O-S-E, in one frame, and then they change it to the correct spelling of close. And I was like, what? Bit of a...
Probably different animators, one who knew English.
Yeah,
than the
possibly.
Other.
Yeah. Someone couldn't spell close. But I'm not mocking them.
Well, I think it's supposed to be like the animation director's job to spot his mistakes and tell him to go back and fix it.
Well, he forgot his computer eye that day. He was lazy.
Anything worth saying about the second one? I mean, the UK dub has an appallingly racist Chinese accent.
Yeah.
That's actually the best bit of it.
Opening action.
I think that's a pretty good opener, but...
Yeah. Yes. I thought that guy, he's this wheelchair-bound, Chinese scumbag. Actually, he's in wheelchair-bound now. He's got cybernetic legs, but roller skates!
Oh.
Yeah, I do like the fact that when he falls in the water, they sort of act like concrete boots.
Oh, of course.
Just sinks to the bottom. Yeah, I do like that opening, and that kind of raised my expectations, which were thoroughly dashed.
Oh, so weak. But you do get some cool scenes of soldiers getting crushed against walls and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was just a bit repetitive. I wanted the variety of weird things to deal with that we had in the first one.
Yeah. What if episode one actually it wouldn't have worked? I was going to say, what if episode two was before one? Like you somehow got the eye before then, and
I don't know.
I just think, start you off crap and then work up to the bigger
that
bigger
doesn't
party.
Work on me, you know that by now.
Yeah, you would have given up. You wouldn't have watched episode two if that was the case, yeah. Yeah. Oversaturated.
I did sort of like the Fist of the North Star unicycle again, because those bikes only had one wheel on them.
Do they?
Yeah, they only had one wheel.
I didn't realise.
And also, and then that guy comes out, he looks a little bit like Rao, the kind of newer version of him, and he just dispatches him all immediately. He's like, it's just like some parts of the future did come true.
Oh, man. Mm. Yeah, so disappointing.
Yeah. The only kind of good thing about it was like, he's figures out now for I can use this interdimensional missile that I can phase out of existence and kind of appear on the other side of an obstacle and then explode. Put that into a thing. Also, put that into a bitchin' sports car that'll also fly. They can go and take out this guy.
Yeah, the technology's all over the place in this. It's like, why aren't they using that interdimensional technology for something else as well as missiles?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, obviously very experimental, like research and development.
Right, that's true, yeah. Maybe once the missile's in full use, then it'll probably get some civilian use of that technology afterwards.
Mm.
That's the idea, isn't it? Favourite characters? Favourite character designs?
Goku, come on.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with Niall.
I don't know, it's just a combination of just, like, he has, like, the suit jacket, no, the whistling ones, even reading his chest and the tie, the mullet,
it's like a
complete package.
Now, I have to say, the motorcycle Catwoman caught me by surprise, because having only seen static pictures of it, I didn't really know how it was going to work. But once she's moving like a cat, I think it works a lot better as a design.
Mm. Mm.
And so if you had to cosplay one character, who would it be?
I know what you're going to say, Anthony.
I'm not. I've actually got a little fit. I don't know what he's called, but in episode 2, in like the Chinese guy's place, there's a guy in like a white hat.
Oh, the henchman.
Yeah, like a henchman, and I think he's got a good backstory somewhere. And it's like he's dressed like what do you call? Not Ip Man. The other dude. I can't remember. Like another dude, like Ip Man. He dresses like him, basically. I was like, oh, that's a cool outfit.
Mm.
So I'd cosplay him. And nobody would know who I was.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't know who you were.
No, exactly.
I was going to say, Goku's a much more like evocative design. Why wouldn't you go for that?
Yeah, I think I'd go for the Genji from the first one.
Oh, he's cool.
Because
yeah.
People might mistake me for Genya from Giant Robot. And if they said, oh, yeah, that's definitely who I am. Definitely not a character from Goku.
What's this in your briefcase? Migratory bird weapon? Oh, yeah, that was like in the giant robot episode that they didn't get to make. Yeah, it's... No.
So how are you now? You're going for Goku, are you?
Oh, I'd pull it off. But I think I'd have to shave.
That's true, but you got the hair for it.
Yeah.
I'd have to get a wig.
Let's say I was Goku after he, you know, got buried under a skyscraper and then broke out of it. Because that's my excuse for when I did the Kenshiro that one time. I'm Kenshiro when he just got out of the skyscraper and cut the building in half with his face.
So why don't you do the Harley lady and put like a little man on your back and make like a little doll to fit on your back and run around KitaCon?
Did that be like one of those costumes you would get for a pet? So you get this entire thing for your cat. No, you put a cat, the motorcycle chassis you got out, a little action figure riding around.
Oh, that'd be good.
Like one of those like costumes you get for a dog, and it's like, you know, he's kind of like walking around, and he's like at the front of him he's carrying like a box, and the back of his back there's like a fake dog head. He's carrying the back of the box.
So would you dress a cat up like this cat would? Give a cat a wig and fake boobs and
I dress a cat up like Goku. Give him a little tie. And a little...
Oh man! What material is Goku's outfit? It's got to be like a leather.
It's like vinyl or something, isn't it?
Like you would hear him squeaking down the corridors whenever he moved.
Yeah, I think he's the sort of guy who would wear a leather suit
and not care. I think we've not really mentioned the fact he kind of scales around the city with his staff.
Yes, true. He's kind of like
jumps out of a helicopter.
He's like a pole vaulting Spider-Man.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think that's the most unbelievable thing that you see.
Yeah. But let's not forget though that this is, you know, he is like in name and nature, he is like some Goku or some Wukong.
Yeah.
So the rest, like, he has the name, he has the extending staff. Yeah, I think he has, you know, similar magic powers to what the classical character has. You know, basically, I can do whatever I want when I want, pretty much. So,
now, am I remembering rightly that he does more of just like chatting to the technology as if it was another human being in the first one than he does in the second?
Yeah, it's like he's in a helicopter and like it's on an autopilot, and he goes and opens the door, and there's obviously like the warning kicks in the phone saying door open. And it's like, relax, helicopter. You should know by now. I do this quest of classic all the time. So don't worry about it.
It's a little weird that because
I liked it. Because it reminded
me. He should be controlling it.
But it reminded me of OMAC, the Jack Kirby comic, with him talking to his satellite brother Eye.
So you think you would have liked episode 2 more if he was nicer?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think the big difference is the lack of your Willy Fogg guy on the second one. I think he must have been bringing something to it.
Yeah. So they think maybe he was too hasty and just like swatting down those cyborg pterodactyls. He's like going saying, "Hey guys, can we just talk about this? You know, no need to just flying up be shooting lasers. We can just like, you know, settle this peacefully, surely."
That is true, yeah. That is,
yeah, why didn't he control them and have them like a horde? Like his fleet.
He probably liked beating them up.
He probably did enjoy it.
That's how he gets his cardio in.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we're gonna show off the chest like that all the time, you gotta stay in shape.
Yeah. Okay, now the question is, can you buy it now? You can, as long as you are happy paying £26 for two used VHS tapes, as there has been no DVD release in English. I think I'd pay...
I don't think we'll ever see it.
I don't think I'd buy it. I've got a VHS player still, but...
It's such a pain to hook stuff up and...
Yeah, exactly. It's a folly, I think, sitting on my shelf. Yeah, £10.80 for part one. So if you're forgetting about part two.
But guaranteed after you see part one, you'll think, I might as well watch part two.
Let's get you one. This thing seems to be doing around fairly well online, even after all these years. So that's not so bad.
There's a few reviews here. One guy gives it 2 stars, the first one. In my words, Goku Midnight Eye is a pointless waste of time. The idea of someone having all the world's computer at his access by using his eye is, on my terms, silly. The plot of the anime is about a ex-cop who finds all of his old squad friends dead and takes revenge. The anime has good animation with voiceovers aren't that bad. If you are the type of person who takes their anime seriously, I advise you to stay away.
Oh, wow.
Ah, come on. This is like definitely like a, it's of the era that the comic was written in, where it's like computers are becoming like a very ubiquitous thing, and there is so much like speculation about in fiction about like what would it possibly do? Like, computers are getting everything nowadays.
Yeah, Terasawa was like a big computer fan, because whenever he would show up in an article in the 90s, he would be talking about, I'm using my computer to color, to draw, to do all these things on the comics.
He's ahead of the game.
He was on that front, yeah. He had his own website in the 90s. I remember looking at it at university.
Oh. Well, 2014 came and went, and there was no pole vaulting shirtless private eyes.
You never know.
Well, not to be known of anyway. Maybe it'll come to light. Well, Secret Pentagon files and so on and so forth, maybe they'll come to light under WikiLeaks sometime in the future. I know.
So you'd say you're probably better off watching a Cobra if you wanted some time.
Yeah, if you want. Yeah, that's like definitely his magnum opus, and it's been adapted like much more entertainingly and consistently. Well,
have you seen
I've
Kabuto?
Not actually.
I was going to say
I've not
Kabuto.
Seen either.
Yeah, I've not seen any of Kabuto. Because that had a TV series and OAV, didn't it? Mm. If I remember correctly. His ninja one.
I'd probably like it then.
Yeah, weirdly, I've not seen any of... I've not seen the Cobra film, but I have seen bits of all the TV series.
Yeah, the Cobra film is a fucking trip, man. it is definitely like a... like, prog rock album slash, sci-fi pop novel cover that come to life, or combine the two together, because the visuals are so psychedelic and the music as well is pretty good.
Anything else to say before we move on to my Journey to the West themed game?
Yeah, if you really got like, you know, if we got to pick one, just stick with that at first part. You know, that'll give you like a good taste of what the world of Kukumina Daya is like, you know. Maybe you can see the comic. I mean, find a comic somewhere and maybe you can follow his adventures in that, perhaps.
Yeah, has any of his stuff... I'm sure some stuff's been translated, but I can't remember which of it is.
I don't know, no. I didn't even think to look for the purposes of this, no.
You can get Kabuto in English. Volume 1, at least, on Amazon.
Yeah, actually, I remember that coming out there.
And Comics 1 did Midnight Eye as well, apparently.
Yeah. Maybe to me that's the next stop.
It's probably just the...
Yeah.
You can get it for a cent on Amazon.com. A cent for Volume 1 of Tabudo.
Well, that's yeah. But I like it almost kind of like one of these definitely lesser known works of Kawajiri. Strange little kind of oddity. It's definitely like the kind of material he would enjoy working with, and you know, it's kind of evident in it. You're getting a lot of his directorial flair just now, like flashing lights, central, especially in part two, where it's like the strobe count goes through the roof.
it does.
But yeah, definitely like it was kind of pivotal, I think, in sort of a stepping stone towards the sort of atmosphere he perfected, I would say, in Cyber City Oedo. Which makes it kind of strange, Daniel, you're seeing, like, there's a scene on one of the highways where folks try to drive around now, and there's a truck that says Cyber City Oedo on the side of it, whether it's going to it or coming from it. But it's like, you know, it's like a little sign of things to come, you know?
Okay, let's play the first time. This might hopefully will be a recurring quiz called Earlier, Later, or Spot On. So... this is the quiz that rewards vague knowledge and liars. Okay, I'm going to give one of you the name of an anime and ask you to name the year it was first released. I will then ask your opponent to tell me if the actual year that the anime was released was earlier than the year you gave, later than the year you gave, or if this year was a spot-on guess. If they are right, they get a point. If they are wrong, you get the point. So, for example, if the anime is One Piece, Anthony guesses 1997 and Niall says later. In that case, Niall would win the point. If he had said earlier or spot on, Anthony would get the point.
Uh-huh.
So, let's start. Anthony.
Yes.
Can you tell me when Shinzo was released, first released?
Shinzo? I don't even know, but I'm going to guess.
Oh, yeah, these are all Journey to the West themed anime, by the way. That's the
key.
God, I don't know whether it's really early or not. Is it really early? Can you tell me that much?
No.
Well, you tell me.
Okay, maybe I'm bluffing. Maybe just to put Niall off the old guess. I'm going to say 83.
Okay, Niall.
Later.
That is correct. You get a point for Niall. It came out in 2000. Okay, Niall. Monkey Typhoon.
Monkey Typhoon. 1995.
Anthony.
What year did you say, sorry, Niall?
95.
Earlier.
No, another point to Niall. It came out in 2002.
Oh, bloody hell.
Okay, Anthony. Alakazam the Great.
92.
Earlier.
That is correct. 1960.
Oh, gosh. Niall.
Niall. Goku no Daibuken.
'84.
Anthony.
Later.
No, earlier. 1967. That's a point to Niall. Anthony.
Yes.
Starzinger.
Oh, that is... Is that 2008?
Niall?
Earlier?
Yeah, 1978.
Oh, what am I thinking of? It's not my day. I hate this game.
That's because you're losing it.
Okay, Niall. Doraemon. Nobita's Parallel Journey to the West.
2002.
Anthony.
Earlier.
That is correct. 1988. Anthony. Dragon Ball.
83?
Niall.
Later.
That is correct. 1986.
Mm.
And the final one for Niall. Monkey Magic.
Oh, I remember this thing. 2005.
Anthony?
Earlier.
That is correct, 1998. So that's 6 points to Niall and 2 points to Anthony. And that is how you play earlier, later, or spot on.
It's a hard one.
That was a hard one, yes.
I like that, kind of the mental warfare going on there.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work if there's more than two of you, but for two players, that should work.
Yeah.
On repeated occasions. So, let's get into plugs. Niall, you are the guest, so you get to plug first.
Okay, you can find me on my own podcast, which is where we be getting up to speed again as we get over this cold. And Secret of the Sacred Bathness, talking about cartoons. Some of the anime there as well. It can be found at secretcinemanus.blogspot.com. You can find me also on Twitter at Nicholas Cage, as NILLCOLAS_Cage.
Anthony, tell me about those role-playing games.
How did you know? If you go to... There's a site there elsewhere, but I'm just going to talk about YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/lockeddoorpuzzle, and if you just jump in, I'm not going to... We recently did a Star Wars special, which was great. My character was like a Han Solo badass.
Senile Han Solo.
Well, yes, apparently so. Apparently so. We've done a Christmas one that's come out after Christmas, which is a bit of a shame, but never mind. And we're back on track with, I forget the name, one we would... Masks of Nyarlathotep. Is that right?
Masks of Nyarlathotep.
That's the one. That's what we're working through at the moment. I would just say jump in. It's... I don't know where to begin. I wouldn't like to say start from the start when because you've got a lot to catch up.
Well, it's an ongoing story, so
I guess so. Yeah, it depends how OCD. If you want to jump in to see where it's like, do that. But if you want to do it properly, start from the beginning.
And so I've got nothing else to plug apart from this podcast and also our other podcast, Let's Go, which is normally out Friday evenings, where we talk about modern anime from the week before, episode by episode. And currently we're talking about Lovely Muko and Lupin the Third, and maybe some new things as well.
I wouldn't have heard of it when we first began doing it, that Lovely Muko would be one of the mainstays.
Oh, Mr. Osomatsu as well, of course.
That too, yeah.
But having watched so many Lovely Mukos in the last episode, that is definitely at the forefront of my mind. And so let us finally begin the traditional reading of the outro. You can find this podcast on dynamiteinthebrain.com, iTunes, Stitcher, player.fm, and many of the other aggregation sites. If you have not already, please subscribe and write a review at one of those sites so more people can find out about the shirtless wonders that are Dynamite in the Brain. Goodbye!
Sayonara!
Bye-bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite.